Hey, this is Adam Sorensen, politics producer at Time.com. Welcome back to The Call, a weekly conversation with Time's political reporters on what they've been working on and the latest from Washington. Joining me this week are Michael Crowley and Michael Scherer.
You both had pieces in the magazine this week about basically the new political landscape for Republicans this year. I guess a good place to start is with the big news of the week, which is Christine O'Donnell winning the Senate nomination in Delaware. Scherer, how freaked out is the GOP establishment over this?
I think they're pretty freaked out, especially in Delaware, where basically the entire establishment was spending the week before the election talking about how O'Donnell is not just not the favored candidate, but a terrible, horrible, no good person who should never be near any public office. There's rarely been a primary where the party establishment, the party infrastructure has so committed to one person only to have the other person win. That said, I think, you know, they've made the right move since O'Donnell's gotten in there. They're pretending like they're embracing her. They're sending her money. They're doing what they can, I think, probably just to hope that she kind of fades from the headlines and they can focus everyone's attention on the fact that they're about to pick up the House.
People kind of have a tendency to lump the Tea Party-style candidates together into one group. You know, your Sharon Angles, your Ken Bucks, your Rand Pauls. Where on that spectrum does Christine O'Donnell lie?
You know, the Tea Party is a phrase that's easy to say but hard to define. You know, at its core, the Tea Party is a economic effort focused around ideas of limited government, lower taxation, lower deficits, less government spending. All the candidates you just mentioned, including O'Donnell, easily fit within that. Then you kind of say, if you're going beyond that, some of those candidates who are embraced by the Tea Party also hold other views. I mean, O'Donnell, for example, who spoke at the Value Voters Summit today, has a long history of basically being a Christian activist arguing for not just biblical values in American culture, but you know, some of those same values in policy. That, you know, someone like Sharon Angle is pretty outspoken about wanting to phase out Social Security and Medicare. It's not clear that that's necessarily like a core Tea Party value. It definitely flows from that, but I bet if you polled people at, you know, Glenn Beck's Tea Party rally, whether they want to, you know, privatize Social Security and Medicare, a significant portion of them would say no.
Clearly, the history of conservative populism. What about the notion that this mirrors more closely a Barry Goldwater type movement, and that it's ultimately going to lead to a Democratic landslides in 2012 or perhaps further down the road?
Yeah, and I actually sort of make this argument in that piece. I think, I mean, far more if your choice is between Ross Perot and Barry Goldwater, I think Barry Goldwater is the best analogy. It's not really a third-party movement. Right now, it's a reformist movement within the conservative Republican body politic. It's possible that in a place like Delaware, Democrats now have obviously a much better chance. So, yeah, you'll lose a seat. It's not clear. Maybe Angle loses in Nevada, but it's very likely that we have at least three, if not more, people who really identify with the Tea Party in the U.S. Senate next year who win those races. Going into 2012, I think the real question is whether the Tea Party continues its sort of secessionist ways, or whether one of the more mainstream candidates is able to harness that energy. Remember, Scott Brown in Massachusetts had tons of Tea Party support. There were Tea Party ads on TV. He's a totally moderate, you know, mainstream Republican, even more liberal than many Republicans are, more liberal probably than, you know, can get nominated in the 2012 in a presidential election in the Republican Party. So I we just don't know yet how it's going to play out. And I think what will happen in 2012 will be determined largely by specific personalities. You know, it's possible if Sarah Palin wants to, that she can become a very divisive force within the Republican Party and drain a lot of support out of a lot of other candidates, which would either lead to her winning and having a very difficult time against the, President Obama, or lead to her, a Republican candidate being nominated, but with a fractured coalition. Or she could, you know, or whoever else is representing the Tea Party could very early come behind someone like Mitch Daniels or somebody like that, or Haley Barbour, or, you know, one of the other more mainstream candidates who can then bring in the Tea Party coalition, bring in their energy, but not alienate independent voters.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Haley Barbour, he's become somewhat of a kingmaker in the Republican Party. He's amassed a lot of money and influence at the Republican Governors Association. Crowley, you had a great piece kind of following the money of independent expenditure in this cycle. Just, you know, explain to me a bit how that works, how that's been affecting this cycle, and also, you know, I mean, what that means for the 2012 cycle. Because it seems to me that independent expenditure is something that Democrats had great success with in their wave year, but it seems to be cyclical, and now it's somewhat died out.
Right, died out for the Democrats. And the Republicans have, you know, almost literally copied the Democratic playbook in this regard. I mean, to back up, you know, for a minute, you know, in 2002, a campaign finance reform bill backed by, at the time, by John McCain, prevented the parties like the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee from soliciting and accepting unlimited donations. People used to talk about soft money. That's what that was. So you could, you know, ask, you could hit up a billionaire for, you know, theoretically, you know, a $3 million contribution to the Democratic Party. Campaign finance reform ended that, but as a result, people realized you could create groups that are not governed by the same set of laws, sort of loopholes in the tax code. You can set up a group and call it whatever you want and accept unlimited campaign contributions and spend however you please. Democrats were sort of the first out of the gate to figure out how to do this really well on a large scale. But, you know, fast forward now to 2010, so these Democratic groups have kind of petered out. Republicans have literally, you know, taken their playbook, are reading books about how they did this in the last few years and trying to copy what they did, and as a result have created an infrastructure of their own like this, which may sort of, depending on how you count and what categories you put what groups in, you know, will spend more than $200 million on this sort of activity. And Haley Barbour, the aforementioned Haley Barbour, is a leader of this effort at the Republican Governors Association, which is actually not a new group. It's been around for a while, but can raise and spend unlimited contributions with minimum disclosure of who their donors are. And they're going to spend upwards of $65 million, maybe as much as $90 million. Essentially what has happened here is Democrats kind of pioneered this form of major fundraising and spending. Republicans have now kind of taken the ball from them. And I think that what's interesting about this story is that the people like Haley Barbour and also Karl Rove and Ed Gillespie and others who really represent the Washington establishment are going to be kind of carpet bombing Democrats, particularly on the television airwaves this fall, just at a moment when we're all talking about these Tea Party insurgents who are trying to overthrow the establishment. Really, it is, you know, at the end of the day, the establishment controlling the big money and deciding the outcome of races from coast to coast.
Well, thank you both so much. Great pieces in the magazine.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
See you guys later.
Pleasure to do it.
For more political news and analysis, head over to time.com/politics. Once again, I'm Adam Sorensen, and this is The Call. Tune in next week.